This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today we hear from two more candidates who are running for state legislature this year. Coming up, Democrat John Hoadley is running for the Democratic nomination in the state House district that includes Kalamazoo. But first, Margaret O'Brien is in her second term in the state House. The Republican represents Portage and the surrounding area in the 61st district. She's not running for that seat again because she's seeking the state Senate seat, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure to be here with you again.
And we're also joined by Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Margaret O'Brien, why don't you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself and why you're running for state Senate?
Well, thank you. The biggest reason I'm running for the state Senate is it's about our community and our larger community, which would be the state of Michigan. My family's been here for a number of years, and I've grown up here. I'm a lifelong Kalamazoo County resident, and I've seen when the economy was good, how wonderful things can be. But I've also seen that when the economy has suffered, that there's a lot of people who go through trials and troubles and they struggle. And it's really important that we have policies that really reflect the people in our state. And so when I look at the decision that I made to run for Senate, first I had to ask for my husband and my two children for their permission to run, because while I may be the one serving, they're the ones who often suffer the consequences of not having me at home. Once they gave me the blessing, I looked at this election, and it's really about, in my eyes, leadership and results. Who has a history of getting results that are positive for our state? And who has the leadership that's willing to jump into tough issues and tackle them? And I think that between my time on the council in Portage and as a state representative, I've been willing to deal with those tough issues that our community has brought. And so I thought, combined with my passion and family history being here in Kalamazoo, I want to bring that type of commitment to state office.
Alex, first question for Margaret O'Brien.
Margaret, when you voted against a minimum wage bill recently signed by Governor Snyder, you said that the bill missed a meaningful opportunity to help struggling Michigan families. Can you expand a little bit on what opportunity you feel was missed?
When we look at minimum wage is meant to be an entry point, a starting point into the job market. It's not to be a staying point, and minimum wage was never meant to support a family, because again, it's meant to be a temporary point in a person's employment. And my concern was, so much of the conversation was about minimum wage. We have to make sure it's high enough to support a family. Having grown up in a family that was poor, minimum wage doesn't help you support a family. Being able to gain further education, more job training opportunities so you can earn your way up that employment ladder, that's what helps move a family out of poverty. My mom and dad both made minimum wage. What would have helped them would be job retraining, more education, not just saying let's increase the minimum wage.
Are you suggesting you'd like to see perhaps more vocational or skills-based training at the high school or possibly college level?
More skills training is essential to our state. When I've talked to Stryker and some of the other manufacturing companies in this town, they are saying the skills that they need do not require a college degree, yet the high school students aren't coming out of school with those skills. I was talking to the Van Buren Intermediate School District superintendent, and they've seen about a 25% drop in their vocational education program because the rules became so stringent at the state level of what every student had to graduate. No longer could you use vocational education to meet certain math or science requirements. And these are students building robots. They're designing them for a specific function, and they are creating, they're doing every step along the way, yet that doesn't count towards science or math. And we passed in the House a Michigan merit curriculum change that would allow for more flexibility. It does not dumb down the standards at all, but it allows for more of the integrated education. Those kids who are building these robots, they're doing physics, calculus, and other aspects, but yet the credits count for none of those. And so we have to do more to bring that back. My brother, he went to the Navy and became a nuclear reactor operator, and he went through the Skills Center, or the Vocational Center in Van Buren County. And today, he's a nuclear reactor operator. He commands a high salary. He never had to go to college to get that job. So that's what we can bring back to our youth who are saying, maybe I'm not ready for college right now, or I want to get right into the workforce upon graduation. Let's help give the schools the tools they need so they can adapt and provide that education.
If I can just kind of wrap up the minimum wage conversation, do you think that the state should have a minimum wage? And if so, where would you place it if it were just simply up to Margaret O'Brien?
I had a minimum wage bill that I had introduced, and I had introduced an $8.20 minimum wage, and I had kept a youth minimum wage because, interestingly enough, youth have about 26% unemployment. And if you can't get your first job, you're going to struggle to get a second and third job, which may be why some of the 20 and 30-year-olds are still stuck in minimum wage jobs. They couldn't get that first job as a 16-year-old. And so I do believe that we're going to keep having a minimum wage. The federal government requires it. Let's have it. Let's raise it. Let's allow for an inflationary index, but not every year. The bill that passed had it every year. Think of the chaos that causes the business owner as they're trying to do payroll. They're constantly having to change everyone's salary constantly, not just by an increase to reward you for good service, but because the minimum wage keeps moving. So we definitely should have it. We should increase it. But this was not the right proposal that'll be good for the hardworking people who are struggling.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with State Representative Margaret O'Brien of Portage. She is running for the Republican nomination for State Senate in the district, which will include all of Kalamazoo County. Also here is Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Alex?
Margaret, another thing you mentioned in your announcement was that you're someone who's willing to work across the aisle. A recent example of that would be your House Bill 5223 that would clarify teacher evaluation standards that you're co-sponsoring with Adam Zemke, if I said that correctly, a Democrat out of Ann Arbor. Could you possibly mention some other areas you'd be willing to work across the aisle if elected?
I'm always willing to sit down at a table and talk about any issue. There were quite a few people who were shocked when I introduced my own minimum wage bill because they thought, why would I introduce this? And I said, because I wanted to have a conversation centered around what's best for our state. And when you can work across the aisle, you can then have a very healthy debate and discussion about what's best for our state. I've done it on a number of legislation. In fact, when you look at the legislation that I have worked on the last 3.5 years, it's been bipartisan. Physical therapy, it's sitting in the House right now. I worked in the last 3.5 years with it, both Democrats and Republicans, and we look to have a physical therapy bill signed into law. That's been a 20-year battle, and it's about doing it the right way, not about making it about yourself. It's about a better Michigan. I look, as you mentioned, my education bill. I asked Representative Zemke to come on board before I even knew what he even thought about the concept. Because when he got elected, I asked him, why did you run for office? And he said, education. I love education. I thought if somebody has that passion that motivates them to run for office, I want them at the table because we can work out our disagreements. I've also worked on a central registry bill, which is a very technical bill that most people don't know about, but it impacts so many people, some negatively, some positively in our state. I worked with Representative Robinson, the most liberal member of the House. I worked with her closely on that bill, and it got signed into law, and she attended the ceremonial signing. Adoption, Representative Kosowski, Democrat, who I worked with closely. I can go on and on. It's really about you as a person. The political party isn't going to solve your problems. You got to look to individuals to lead. And I've never been afraid to lead. And if I make a misstep, I'm never afraid to apologize or to rethink and to look at new information. If we're unwilling to sit down with somebody who might have a little bit different perspective, then how's that good for our state? So I'm all about working with people on both sides of the aisle.
As I'm sure you're aware, there was going to be another candidate in this Republican primary for state Senate, former Representative Lawrence Winkie, who right before filing deadline decided to run as a libertarian. At the time, he cited the Republican Party's stance on gay rights as the main reason that he was switching parties. What I want to know from you is, do you view this as an ongoing, the gay marriage issue in particular, an ongoing debate that the Republican Party is still having? Or is the Republican Party pretty settled here? And if someone like Lawrence Winkie is totally uncomfortable with that position, perhaps he has done the right thing by joining a different party.
What's really behind this is, how do we talk about issues that are deemed controversial? Gay people are the same type of person as you and I. Just like women have been put into a glass box, I think gay people have been put into a glass box where they're treated as something different than just an individual. We do need to talk about gay marriage. We need to talk about discrimination. But we need to do it without rhetoric and without disrespect. And that's been the real struggle if you look over the last few years as this issue has come up more and more. The people who command all the attention tend to be the people who are extremely militant or who say the craziest things. The people who want to sit down at a table across from somebody who has a different opinion than them or has an idea they want to approach, that's kind of boring. And so that's often ignored. We need to talk about these issues, but if all we're going to do is throw rhetoric out or disrespect, it will never allow for solutions to be found. So I do believe we need to deal with some of the discriminatory issues that we have out there. But let's sit down and really talk about the differences, how you can find solutions, what are different options. You know, throwing rhetoric or disrespect out there, it's never going to move a ball down the field. It's like throwing a Hail Mary on every play. It might work once. It'll never work every time.
Do you think that the state's Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act should be amended? Governor Snyder says he wants lawmakers to discuss this. Amend it so it includes protections for sexual orientation. Would you be in favor of that?
I definitely want to talk about it. I can't tell you what I would or wouldn't be in favor of because I want to sit down and look at all of the issues. Speaker Bolger has talked about this a lot, and I think he's right on the fact we talk about differences of religious views, but we also talk about sexual orientation. Everybody deserves to be respected. What is the best way to provide the protections that people need? In real estate, I've never asked somebody if they were gay, not gay, if they were married, not married. For me, it was about the information they felt was important that I needed to find them the home they wanted or to help them sell their home. And in my profession, we're not to discriminate. And so for me, I never asked people what their value systems were. I was just there to serve. And I think we need an economy, a job market that's similar to that. But how do you cross that line? I can't tell you if somebody is or is not straight or gay unless they tell me. And so that's where we need to look at what do the employers think, because they don't want to be in a position of asking questions that they shouldn't be asking in an effort to not discriminate. So how do we find the balance? Let's talk about it. I'm open for the conversation and I want to be at the table.
Alex?
Margaret, if I can move back to Lawrence Winkie for a moment. When he made his announcement that he was going to be running as a Libertarian, it caught a lot of people off guard, including Congressman Fred Upton, who said during an interview with the Gazette that he thinks Mr. Winkie's decision hurts your chances in November because it'll draw voters from the same pool. Were you caught off guard by his decision to run as a Libertarian at all? And do you agree with Congressman Upton that it could hurt you in November?
You know, first, let's understand this is one of the most competitive Senate seats in the state. So this was going to be a hard election, no matter who was in. But for me, I didn't worry about who is the person that might be running in the primary or the general election. I believe that I have a message that I want to give to voters, which is a can-do attitude, one that's been built on results in the House, with leadership in the House. You can lead on tough issues, even if they're not, don't seem to be part of your party's platform. You can still be a leader on these issues. And so when he decided to become a Libertarian, obviously conventional wisdom will say it may pull from the Republican ticket. But when you look at the issues he's running on, I would argue those aren't Libertarian issues. That isn't the Libertarian Party doesn't want government deciding anything. And so I can't tell you where the votes would be pulled. Maybe it's more in a different direction. For me, I want to show that this election is about being respectful of all people in our community, all people in our state, and let's look at the records of everybody in the race. I'm the only one that has a record of real results across the aisle, and I'm the only one that doesn't go out and spew partisan political talking points. I have been with my party when I agree with them on the issues, but there have been tough issues where I've said, no, I don't think that's the right policy, and I voted against them, even though it may have given me political benefit. I'm about what's best for my community and state.
Margaret O'Brien, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien is a state representative. Her district includes Portage in the 61st State House District. She's running for state senate for the seat, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. And we also want to thank Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thank you, Gordon. Thank you.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new representative in Michigan's 60th State House District next year. Current Representative Sean McCann is running for State Senate, and three Democrats are running for the open seat, including John Hoadley. He led the campaign to keep a non-discrimination ordinance on the books in Kalamazoo in 2009 that included protections for sexual orientation. Hoadley is making his first run for public office. Thank you for being here.
Gordon, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
John Hoadley, why don't you begin with a little background about yourself and perhaps briefly tell us why you're running for State House.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. You know, I'm running because I believe in a Michigan that invests in people. And for me, that means doing more to make sure that education works for everybody, that we have an economy that's going to help us all succeed, and you know that we're having a Michigan that is open to all and protects our environment. So I come from a family of teachers, and so for me, education is a top priority. And we're in the city of the promise, and so we really have to be doing everything we can to attract and retain the best teachers. You know, additionally, as a small business owner, I've seen what's been working, what's not been working in the economy. This idea that we're going to continue to do tax breaks for big corporations with the promise of jobs just hasn't been working out well for us. So we need to make sure that we're changing that conversation and putting more money back in working people's pockets. Last but not least, you know, I was talking a little bit about this idea of a Michigan that's open to everybody and protects our environment. I've been an advocate for social justice and the environment my whole life. And really, Kalamazoo can have a leading voice in that conversation across the state and in the state legislature. So, you know, these are some of the things that really have given me the encouragement, the excitement to run for office. And then, you know, really talking to folks in the community who asked me to run provided the impetus for me to get my feet wet and, you know, give this a shot.
Alex, first question for John Hoadley.
John, despite this being your first run for public office, as Gordon mentioned, you've helped manage several campaigns in the past. Can you speak to how that experience has helped you prepare for your own campaign?
You know, like you said, this is my first time with my name on the ballot, but I've helped a number of campaigns run either as ballot measures for local government here in the city commission or state representatives here in Michigan, and even statewide offices like Bridget Mary McCormick when she ran for the Michigan Supreme Court and won. You know, I think that understanding how good public policy is made, you know, the idea that we need a lot of different voices involved in the campaign process, but also then figuring out who the other stakeholders are and how we work together to tackle some of these big challenges. You know, that's really informed how I run campaigns. It's informed my background. And these are the type of things that I'd be able to bring to the office.
Well, let's talk about making some good public policy, fixing the state's roads. This is issue number one, according to many voters. What would be your plan for addressing Michigan's infrastructure needs, and how do you pay for it?
Roads, bridges, infrastructure, this is the conversation people are having. And it's not just because we had a terrible winter with a lot of potholes at the end of it. It's because it's about of a larger conversation. And are we going to take care of the gift that our parents and the generations before gave us with our highway systems and our bridges and maintain that for the 21st century? Back in February, we launched a website called fixmypotholes.com, and it was an effort to raise awareness about the fact that we have been seriously underfunding our infrastructure needs in Michigan. And I was shocked at the response. You know, not only were we able to showcase local stories like Wendy Medrano, who, you know, literally driving down the road, hits a pothole, you know, gets a flat tire and is out $150. But it really showcased the safety issues related to the topic and how this is hurting our economic development. When we're thinking about how we're going to solve this and how we're going to pay for it, we need an all of the above approach. So for us, that means, you know, taking a look at this wholesale tax as one opportunity to look at the funding gaps, you know, thinking about let's expand the gas tax so everyone is paying their fair share. You know, let's take a look at some equitable solutions so folks that are driving more environmentally friendly cars are also paying their fair share without punishing them for having an environmentally friendly choice, to, you know, finding ways that we're going to support the work with the general fund. At the end of the day, this is really about a larger conversation and how we find revenue in the state and how we're going to make sure that we have a priority-based budget so we can adequately fund all the needs in our state, whether they be infrastructure, education, health and human services, and the like.
There have been a couple candidates here, and actually from both political parties, Republicans and Democrats, who've said they're open to toll roads. How about you?
I'm less excited about a toll roads opportunity here. I think that we need to have appropriate user fees. We need to have appropriate registration fees. But the semi-privatization of our roads, I am less excited about. I think, you know, there's environmental impacts to doing that. And, you know, ultimately, it's placing a burden on a lot of working families, and not necessarily in an equitable way that would, you know, take into account that some of the folks that make the most money off these roads aren't paying their fair share of the upkeep of those roads.
Alex?
John, I want to ask for your stance on the recent minimum wage bill signed into law by Governor Snyder. Would you have supported that bill, or would you have preferred to have seen the issue go to the ballot this fall?
So I think that's not an either-or question. In this case, I would have supported the bill in front of us because we knew that something was going to move through the legislature. There was politics, not just good public policy, involved in this one. And so I was happy that the final amount was, you know, $9.25. You know, it was higher than what some of the initial amounts proposed were. I was glad to see it tied to rates of inflation so we can make sure that it's keeping up with the real cost of living on a yearly basis. Now, that said, I would have supported the 10-10 proposal because I think ultimately the more money we can put back in working people's pockets, the better. I think it also had, at the end of the day, a more effective solution for tipped workers that was then accounting for the real costs of doing that labor. So, you know, if given a perfect world, I would have loved to see the ballot measure pass. Given the political reality of what was happening, I'm glad that we got as much done in that process as we could.
You mentioned that you thought that the ballot proposal was better for tipped workers. That's a concern for, you know, restaurant owners and those sort. You know, do they have a legitimate concern that if you brought tipped workers up too high, it would squeeze their bottom line a little too hard?
I'm a small business owner myself, so, you know, keeping the concern of small business owners and restaurant owners in mind is something that I take very personally. I also know that we've seen a lot of restaurants and, you know, really able to address this issue. You know, things like when places like Rustica in town are already saying that they'll raise their minimum wage to $10.10 an hour for their, you know, for their workers, their tip workers. I think that is setting the example that it is possible. And I think that there were some safeguards built into the measure. It didn't raise them at the same rate as we would have raised the rest of the minimum wage. So it had time to meet the tipped worker minimum wage longer than the rest of the package. I mean, there's a lot of pieces built in here that I think were addressing those concerns. But at the end of the day, if you're working a minimum wage job and you are working hard and playing by the rules, you should not at the end of the year end up in poverty. And this, whether you're a tipped worker or not, this was addressing those concerns and making sure that we lived up to those values.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with John Hoadley, a candidate for State House in Michigan's 60th District. He's one of three Democrats running to represent the district, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette is here as well. Alex?
Let's talk about marijuana for a minute. Would the statewide decriminalization be something that you'd support? And if so, would you possibly see statewide legalization being something that you'd be in support of?
I think I always go back to my first principles, you know, when we're thinking about public policy. Let's look at the facts. Let's keep our community safe and strong. And then let's make sure that we are promoting as much liberty, freedom, and opportunity for people as possible. So things like criminalization, there's an interesting experiment that's going on across the country. When we see places like Colorado or Washington, you know, do full legalization, we've seen places, a number of states tackle decriminalization, and, you know, places like Michigan with our medical marijuana, although Bill Schuette has been really throwing some wrenches in that process that folks wanted to support. At the end of the day, you know, if there is a system that is well-regulated, that has appropriate standards, much like we see with the sale of alcohol, you know, and it keeps our community safe, I would be in favor of decriminalization and legalization based on what we're seeing occur across the state and across the country.
Governor Snyder said he would like lawmakers to look into amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, which is more or less the state's non-discrimination law, and look at including protections for sexual orientation, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people. Does this sound like a good idea to you?
I am in favor of doing work on amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to include protections based on sexual orientation and gender identity. In fact, I've been doing this work for a long time now here in Michigan. After the One Kalamazoo campaign, which, you know, I had a chance, I think, where a lot of folks met me doing work on advocating for fairness and equality here in Kalamazoo, 16 other municipalities in the last 3 years have adopted similar ordinances. And it's really about teeing up a conversation across the state, how we treat people fairly and equally. So I would absolutely be in favor of that. And it also makes good economic sense. You know, I talked about at the beginning about we need a Michigan that's open to everybody and protects our environment. And this is the work of folks like Richard Florida, who's saying by when we combine technology, talent, and tolerance, we can actually attract the next generation of entrepreneurs who are going to be here and start their businesses and start their families. And, you know, that's the kind of investment and development that's going to be best for Michigan. And so, yeah, let's put up, instead of this you're not welcome here sign that's been going up for so long, let's say, you know, everybody's welcome. We want your talent. We want you to contribute to our community. So absolutely, I would support that.
Among the endorsements listed on your webpage is a Quality Michigan Pride Pack, and it says that this is an opportunity to support an openly gay candidate for the Michigan legislature, which would be a tremendous step toward true representation in our state's government. Do you agree with that statement?
I believe that the more voices you can bring to the table, the better that our government will be. And so I'm honored to have the Equality Michigan Pride Pack's endorsement, CAFE, which is the Kalamazoo Alliance for Equality's endorsement, as well as the National Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund's endorsement. Michigan is one of 11 states that has zero openly gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender legislators. And we haven't had an openly gay legislator since Chris Kolb served and concluded in 2007. At the end of the day, we've seen, you know, a legislature that's been hostile to LGBT folks and folks who care about LGBT people and our families. So yeah, I do think that there is value in diversifying the voices that are at the table.
We're down to just a little bit of time left. Let me ask you about experience. You, as I noted at the beginning, are running for political office for the first time. You've managed campaigns, but as I look at the history of this area since I have been here for now almost 18 years, generally, people who move up to the state legislature have served on a city commission or the county commission, Portage City Council for the 61st District. This is a route that you're pursuing that normally is not the way people take to get to the state house. So make the case here that that you're going to do the job as best as can be done without having served on a local government board yet.
I hope people are going to be voting for the best ideas, the best energy, the best vision for the 60th district, for Kalamazoo, and for Michigan as their number one decision-making criteria when they go into that ballot box. And when it comes down to talking about policy, when it comes down to increasing voices and participation in the democratic process, when it comes down to strong advocacy for the values that we share and the issues that are important, I have a track record that shows that I'm ready on day one in Lansing. I've been doing work on important and tough issues across the state and across the country for over a decade now. And that's the skills that we can bring to make sure that Kalamazoo has a larger voice in the decision-making process of our state. That's part of the reason that I'm running. You know, I get it. It is not the typical path that people have seen in the past. And in fact, I might even look more like the folks that are coming out of KVCC, Western, or K-College than some of the other people in the race. But I hope that folks see my candidacy in this campaign as a bridge. You know, there is a legacy of outcomes of Michigan values that have come before us. And we have an obligation to continue that legacy. And I promise that I will if folks elect me to serve. But we also have a vision about where the state is going and a set of opportunities that are really unique for this coming generation, the millennial generation, which is a lot of people's children or grandchildren. And so I think that I can be that bridge. I can bring that experience and I can bring those stories and advocacy to Lansing in a way that's going to make sure that our values are heard and represented in the state legislature.
John Hoadley, thank you for your time.
Thanks for allowing me to be here. I really appreciate it.
John Hoadley is a Democrat running for State House in Michigan's 60th District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. And we also want to thank Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Longer versions of the interviews on West Southwest can be found at wmuk.org. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.